You're listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play role-playing games. My name is Eran Aviram.
Hi Eran, my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello.
Hello, and today we shall discuss genre, because I come from Hebrew originally, and in Hebrew you say genre, I'm always unsure about how to pronounce the word. Is it genre?
Genre, I think. Let's go with genre, because it sounds more fancy. And today we will discuss how to get the best of both worlds, taking two genres and mash them up together to create a brand new game or game setting for your game. Now, I'm sure that some of you are thinking, right, I studied this in English Lit, now what's a genre exactly? Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines a genre as a category of artistic, musical, or literary composition characterized by a particular style, form, or content.
Okay.
So we got a lot of wiggle room there for the definition of genre. The main idea is that a genre has identifying features. It is something that you can recognize, even if some of them can get blurry around the edges or mixed with others. There's a whole compositions of things that when bundled together, you say, that's a genre.
Yeah, yeah. When you see a group of tropes together, tropes that can be anything from a style of plot, characterization, aesthetic. I wouldn't say aesthetic is a kind of trope, actually. But all of these together, and you say, that's a Western.
Of course. But pay close attention. This is an ongoing discussion. Usually you say, okay, there's a spaceship and the party is in a spaceship. They're traveling the unknown verse and they're trying to get their hands on something. This is most often would be a science fiction genre of some plot. However, if the rest of the aesthetics is totally Wild West themes, then you might say, okay, this is this now a sci-fi or a Western? And the answer is, of course, this is a space Western. You can also have a space opera, a fantasy opera, etc., etc.
Yeah, I think there are two things that are really important to me here. First, there are a lot of subgenres, and it's really useful to know as many of them as you can, because you might realize that something that you thought is part of the bigger picture is actually its own kind of picture, and there are many different types of, like, for example, space fantasy, which is a thing that I only came to realize is a thing a few years ago. And the second thing is, we are not advocating classification. It could be that this specific movie or series can be classified as X or Y or Z, but I don't think it's important for us to actually do this.
Indeed.
I think it's useful for us to know what the genres are in order for us to then use them when we create our own thing, which again, there's no need to classify it, because the instinct most of the time is to take a comic or a game and start arguing about what specific genre it is about. It doesn't matter. It simply does not matter in the grand scheme of things.
I disagree slightly, but you can look at the grand picture. As we said, for example, there's the long time discussion of whether Star Wars is in fact a fantasy film series or a sci-fi. And I think, you know, from the academic point of view, this is clearly a fantastical plot set in a setting of a classic sci-fi. There's a mixing of the genre there that makes you go, I get what you're saying, because a lot of the tropes and settings are very inherently science fiction oriented, while a lot of the other elements are very fantastical.
Sure.
However, once we have discussed this, the concept of genre, we want to discuss the rest of the title of this episode, which is a mashup. The Merriam-Webster's Dictionary define a mashup, noun, as something created by combining elements from two or more sources. which is exactly what we just talked about in the context of Star Wars. You take some element of fantasy and some element of sci-fi and you create something new. This is a mashup of genre. And this is what we want to discuss today. How you can take different genres, mix them to create something which is brand new and interesting. A lot of time when you want inspiration or you want to do something new, you're saying, okay, maybe I should switch genres. Maybe I should do something different from what I usually do. But then there's this little voice in your head that's saying, but Uri, you love high fantasy. That's the shit. That's what you like to run. You say, yeah, but I've ran so many high fantasy adventures that I'm getting bored. Probably some of my players are getting bored. What am I going to do now? Well, Uri, why don't you do a mashup? Oh, that's a great idea, silly me. How would I do that? And that is easy. Now, since, as I mentioned, I really love high fantasy and running high fantasy game, you can simply take another genre and run your game in that setting. For example, if I already have a high fantasy setting, which I usually run in, and I want to do something new, I can take another genre. For example, film noir, which is another genre which I like. If you're unfamiliar with the film noir, that's the whole black and white detective stories where the hero is usually this very lonely, very rough man who's always been misled by a femme fatale who's taking him down a rabbit hole and in the end he's always end up alone after solving this really, really weird mystery. And it's always very sad and introspective. But in our case, I simply said, okay, why don't I have a murder mystery or some other really detective-oriented adventure set in my high fantasy setting, which I did. And I enjoy that so much that I immediately follow up with the whodunit. Whodunit is a different genre of detective stories. Unlike the film noir, it is less introspective and it lends itself very easily for games. In my current campaign, Unrelated Incident, as the name implies, every adventure is about an unrelated incident. I did this on purpose so that any adventure that I run inside this campaign setting would give me a possibility of mashing a different genre into the urban fantasy genre in which we usually play. Now, I've done comedy. I've done horror inside that urban fantasy. Both are very, very different genre, and the mashup works very well.
I would claim that comedy is a tone. It's not a genre. Horror is a genre because you there's a set of things that define horror, but comedy is things that are funny.
It's debatable, but it's a good point, so I'm gonna fine tune it. I wanted to get a very specific sensation. I want to get the Zucker Brothers style of comedy.
Oh, okay, that's a genre.
Into my urban fantasy game. So I did very specific comedic trope which are taken from that specific genre.
Yes, okay. Okay.
This is again why it's very important to be precise about what it is you're trying to achieve and what genre you're trying to mash up. So you're saying to yourself, cool, I want to do a genre mashup. This is awesome. I have my campaign. I'm running my game in this specific setting and genre, and I want to put in it an adventure set in a different genre to get that wonderful mashup magic going. How can I do that? How can I understand what it composed this genre I want to add to my game? I can talk about this for a long while because as a professional improviser, I have done this many times. There is even an improv game, if you have ever watched Whose Line Is It Anyway, called Genres, in which you act out a scene and in the middle of the scene, someone yell, freeze, and then say a specific genre. And you need to continue that scene within that genre. And then you get paused again, and the genres keep changing and changing and changing without interfering with the actual scene. Now, this is a great example to see how actors and improvisers understand a specific genre. For example, if you're in a scene and someone says, well, hello, kind sir, and the other person about to reply, and then someone says, okay, continue in the genre of horror. Someone who doesn't understand the horror genre might immediately yell and run away. However, horror is about silence and expectation and tension.
Yes.
The scream is usually the outlet, the moment after the horror is either revealed or experienced. So if I were to act out a scene and someone said hello and then someone say, okay, we go for horror, I would stare at them blankly, take a step back and maybe whisper to myself, no, no. That's how you generate that horror sensation. How do I know this? Because as an improv artist, when I try to do genre, you take a genre, you watch the classics of that genre, you write down to yourself what are the archetypes of characters, what are the tropes, what is the set of expectations that comes with the genres. Also, you write yourself a lot of notating characteristics. If you would notice, if you try to get into the genre of Shakespeare plays, you can go to the simple form of speeches and speak with seemingly old English. You can use the trope of recurring names. Shakespeare used a lot of similar names throughout his plays. So whenever you want to do something Shakespeare-like, you're going to go with, oh, Mercutio or Romeo or whatever. You would also go to very specific plots inside that. Either everyone falls in love or everyone dies at the end. It's very specific. So you need to learn in order to create a good facsimile of a genre, in order to do a mashup. So again, what's the best way to do that? To immerse yourself inside that genre. Understand tropes, archetypes, set expectations. And Eran's going to go into how to do that later on and how to actually put that into your game. But for now, I recommend this is an amazing experience to do, even if you're not planning on actually doing a genre mashup. I remember a few years ago, we wanted to do a whole show centered around a heist, meaning we wanted to go on stage to ask the audience for something that someone would want to steal, and some other basic concept to start with, and then to do an actual heist play. Now, it's funny because a heist has the classical heist, have a very set structure to it. You know, there's a small preview of the bad guy. The bad guy is always very, very bad. And then you have this one guy who wants to get revenge and perform the heist, and he has this whole montage of, you know, getting the gang back together, and every scene is one of the other people as they are being recruited for the job. And we get to know the people and their skill sets. That's the point of this montage. And the characters are also very set. You have this expert, the right-hand man, the fixer, the face. There's an actual name for the archetypes in the heist genre. Oh, more often than not, you would have the new guy, who is a literary trope to allow the more experienced people to explain things to him and thus explaining things to the audience. In order to understand all this, we simply made a list of all the classic heist movie series and books, read them, actually wrote down the structure of them and the different characters and tropes in order to digest them and understand what makes a movie or a series into a heist series. What makes you go, oh, this is a heist? And it's amazing because then you can import subsection of that into your game. For example, when I ran the urban fantasy heist scene, because in film it's very common to see everyone around the drawing board explaining the plan, and then every time you say, okay, you take out the guard, and then you cut to the actual scene where it happened a few hours later, and then you go back to the the scene of everyone around the table explaining the plan, and you jump back and forward. And since we were playing Fate, it was simply all the characters were on the table explaining the plan. And then as it happened, if they encountered any kind of obstacle, they could simply spend the fate point to go back to the previous scene and talk about how they actually already solved this problem, which gave that really cool sense of the cutting back and forward in time, which is something you see in the movie and a very important characteristic of heist movies. So let's talk a bit about how we can do all this right. Eran, you want to explain?
Well, I think the first thing to say about how to do it right is do it small. We only talked about meshing up two genres so far, and I think it's because whenever you try to go beyond that, the experience you'll get will be muddled. Space Western is awesome, but also trying to make it into a horror game might make the whole thing unclear, because everyone has expectations. When you tell your players, yeah, we're going to play Space Western, they know what kind of characters to create. When you tell them it's a Space Western horror thing, I'm unclear about what type of character I need to create. In a horror game, I'm usually supposed to be someone who is underpowered, and in some way it's hard for me to be able to affect the world. I'm usually affected by it. But in a Western, I'm expected to be the lone hero riding into the town. And in space, I mean, is it only the setting? Is it only just that we have spaceships? Or do we also have post-humanist tropes and concepts about communication being a very big thing, and real world science, and I mean, what is going on? It's hard to tell. So focus on just two, I suggest. Then do exactly what Uri said and immerse yourself in both genres. You can do it like the improv group that Uri is part of, where they actually sat down and wrote everything, but that's a lot of work and I would never do that. I would probably just watch one or two big names, big series, and I will watch them. I will not read them, because I want the aesthetics as well. I want the pacing of a movie or of a series, because that's how usually I think of when I come to play role-playing games. And I will read TV tropes, because that's they already did all of the work for me. When I read Western, for example, on TV tropes, they list all of the main tropes that make a Western a Western. I don't need to use all of them, but I should really be aware of some of them. And I should pick some and focus on those. It's even better if I can pick a specific subgenre and focus on that one, because then everything will just be clearer. The more focused you are, the clearer things are, because it is a subdivision of subdivision of subdivision. So when you take the tropes from each of these genres, I think the best thing to do is to mix only some of them and just forget about the rest. Like, for example, in a Western, you can't use all of them when you also mix it with supers. That's because we are talking about two very different groups of things. And if I sit down and try to mix everything from all of the groups together, I will just have a soup of everything, and it's going to take me ages to create it, and it will be unclear again. So focus, take only some of the most iconic, interesting things from one of them, and only the most iconic, interesting things from the other one, and those that mesh the best. And how do you know what mesh the best? Well, first of all, just read them. You will see some things click together. When you go through a Western, for example, you will see there's the lone hero. And when you go through supers, you will see there's a lone hero. And you'll see that they are both somehow above society and not accepted by society. And oh, that's interesting. And then you'll be able to take the tropes that are relevant in each of those genres and combine them together in a way that will be synergetic. You'll get something more than what it was before. A few other things you should think about is the aesthetics. Like when you want to combine, for example, Westerns and Super, you should combine the aesthetics of both of them as well. Even if the main thing that's going on is a Western, people should have something similar to capes in some way. It might even just be, I don't want to say in jest, but as a background detail. But there should be some sort of uniform going around. There should be something similar to the specific aesthetics of the specific subgenre of supers that you are using. Coles, for example, if you take Batman, who is very much a cowboy. In some of the ways that he's portrayed in very different ways. Also, a thing that you should really focus about is this type of stories, which I think is technically a trope. I don't know what it is, but it's a story type, a story style. There are specific stories told in each genre. Superhero tales are usually not about defeating the evil guy. They are not. There are evil guy, but superhero tales are basically soap operas.
You're talking mainly about plots and subject matter.
Yeah, nice, great. I like it. I think I went with story types because I immediately go to adventures. What type of adventure am I going to run with this? Is it going to be a dungeon or is it probably not a dungeon? But is it going to be something
else? Is it going to be a dungeon crawl or an interaction based or a whodunit?
For example. So each of the genres that I'm going to take have their own thing, and I should find a way, not necessarily to combine them, but be aware of them. I don't think you can necessarily combine these different things. They are different. When you tell a specific plot, you don't tell a different plot. That's fine. But be aware of it and try to combine the tropes from the other genre, the one that you are not currently using as the main plot, into the first one to make it more colorful and interesting. And that's maybe the primary thing I have to say here. I think you should always take one of the genres as the basic one, the one that is the main thing we are doing, and then you try to put the other one on top of it. You might mix and match. Maybe on one adventure you use the plot of one and the aesthetics of the second. Maybe in a different one you use the characterization of the second one and the plot of the first. It doesn't matter. The main thing is, don't let yourself go astray into the wilder land of let's create something new out of everything and it'll be a third genre, because then you'll get a third genre. Then you will actually create something that is not the set of expectations you are trying to create here. And the players, again, they won't know what to do, because it's not going to be a supers Western. It's going to be, I don't know what you'll get. It might be awesome and cool, but everyone should be aware that it's no longer a space Western. Finally, regarding all of this, it's really important to use the right mechanics. Like, for example, if you want to run high fantasy, awesome, yes, use D&D 5, no problem. But if you want to actually combine it with a whodunit, you might need to add some new mechanics to it. It's not because D&D 5 is bad or anything, it's just not attuned to whodunit games. The only thing you can do is roll investigation or perception. And that's fine, but that's not very interesting. And mechanics create experience. And the experience you want is of a specific mashup of two genres. So it will be best if you'll add some new mechanics, probably inspired by some other system. Maybe even from the get-go, just use a different system. Like, I don't think that if I want to add whodunit to high fantasy, I would start with D&D 5. I think I would begin with something else entirely. Probably not an investigative system like Gumshoe, because that loses the high fantasy. I'll probably go for something in the midway, like Genesis, which allows me to use the best of both.
I'm going to also refer you to our episode about we're going to need a new mechanic for this, because we've encountered this mainly because of genre mix-up, where you want to do stuff that the system does not support. That's one of the main reasons that drove us there.
Now, I want to give an example of a specific setting I created in which I combined two genres and how I did it. Because it was a pretty simple process that uses everything we've talked about, familiarity with the tropes, using one genre as a basic and the other one on top of it, and retro justification, which is the best thing in the world. So I decided to combine supers and post-apocalypse, because I was unaware of anything that was similar, and I wanted, and I was curious about how this could happen, how I can create something that combines the two. There is something that combines the two, from the Trinity line of White Wolf. I think Aberrant and Trinity, I think they are very similar to something that I'm going to explain now, but I was unaware of it at the time. I will give links to all of it, of course, in the show notes. So I decided to start with the supers as the basics of the story. That is, the world became post-apocalyptic. There was an apocalypse because of the supers. And I asked myself, why would that happen? In order to create an apocalypse, you need a lot of power, and supers have a lot of power. So now what we need is a reason for them to lose their mind and basically go around and demolish everything. Okay, but why would that happen? Why would all of the superheroes in the world lose their mind and create an apocalypse so horrible that we are talking about a post-apocalypse genre, that is something that happens years later in a society built on survival and scarcity and tribalism? How would they go so off the rails? Well, what if Earth really needed supers, people with superpowers? I mean, they really, really needed them. So much so that they were willing to risk it and give people superpowers without checking the psychological effect, without approving it in the FDA before administering the cure. Mm. And then a lot of people, they got superpowers, did whatever it is they had to do because everyone was so desperate. The thing that was the crisis, and a few years later, lost their mind. Sure, but why cool. do you need super so fast? Well, how about
alien invasion?
Great
meteor, exactly. Underwater Godzilla,
alien invasion. That's the best. Alien invasion is approaching. There's a race of aliens. They arrived at the edge of the solar system. They transmit to Earth that they want us to get ready to their arrival, because their FTL travel is only to the edges of star systems, and they need to take the long way to Earth. It will take them 10 years. And during this time, 10 years, they want us to build some things for them. Instead, we create supers, etc., etc., etc. So we started with asking ourselves how to mesh the two things, and ended up with a history that from now on, of course, we can use to establish some new facts about the world right now. Like, for example, because there are aliens and alien technology, we can do some cool things with them. Now that we know that there are insane superheroes around, we can have all sorts of cool bosses running around the place and doing interesting things. And of course, we know who the player characters are going to be. They're going to be a new generation of superheroes who might or might not lose their mind later on. And then that, of course, adds the post-apocalyptic theme of hope versus despair, which does not actually happen all that much in supers, but is a very basic thing for post-apocalyptic games. So, excellent. And then we run from there, and that's basically it.
The game took place before or after the alien arrived?
Oh, hundreds of years later. The game is set after the apocalypse already happened. The players, characters know nothing of the world before, etc., etc. Okay, that's it. Uri, anything else to add about genre mashups?
Don't be afraid. Whenever you run a new adventure inside your current setting, don't be afraid to say to yourself, okay, this is a new adventure. Let's do that in a specific genre. Let's try and add something different to my world, to my style of gaming, to my current list of favorite plots. It usually would make your world more open and interesting, and might even open up brand new concept for your players and for the characters to use.
Tell me, if I'm going to run an adventure, only one adventure, as a mashup, I usually play pirates, yar, etc., and I want to have a heist in one adventure. Should I tell the player, this is going to be a heist game? I mean, is the genre expectation something they should be aware of?
It's a question of style. I personally, I always prefer to show, not tell.
Okay.
So I'm gonna put it very bluntly on the table without saying it.
Okay.
So I'm gonna do something, something like, okay, you've docked your pirate ship, and now you're sitting around the table next to the arc villain of Spellport, where he explained to you exactly what you're gonna steal and from whom, because he has scoured the seas to find you the perfect man for this one last job, after which you can all retire. Now, if
excellent,
they don't,
excellent.
You know, if they haven't got it by now, I'm gonna lay it on thick.
Sure, I like it. That's a brilliant idea. And with that, I think it's time to take the load off.
Do 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 do. Papa.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk a bit about role-playing games in our own personal lives. Uri, what have you been doing?
Well, my current session this week was canceled because everyone were sick. Amazingly, everyone. It's like a post-apocalyptic thing. Mm-hmm. However, that gave me a little bit more time to catch up with my reading. And I finally finished reading the Superpowered series, which I think I've been reading for the last year and a half. This is like 4 books and 1 spin-off, and they're very, very long. If you're not familiar with it, Superpowers is a superheroes series written by Drew Hayes, which we interview here in this very podcast a few weeks back. And it is, I think I can, now that I finished the series, can say, hands down, this is the best superheroes book series I've ever read. I'm going to put a disclaimer there. I haven't actually read it. I've listened to it on an audiobook, if it matters for everyone, for anyone. And now that I finish it, I can go on to reading different things written by Drew Hayes. So I'm currently reading Siege Tactic, which is part 4 in a series about non-player characters inside the gaming world. The first book is titled NPCs, and it's very much about what happened inside your gaming world once your adventurers have moved on. What's going on with the NPCs, so to speak, and what happens if they gain awareness to the fact that they're NPCs. What's beautiful in this book series for me is that Drew Hayes really understand what is the difference between an adventurer and an NPC, and those places where those line blurs, because you have an NPC, but that NPC is the hero of this story. Does that make them an adventurers? And if they go adventuring, are they adventurers now? Or are they simply NPCs with more focus? And he plays on that line a lot, which is something that it's a problem, because I read these books, and then I said, okay, I have to play, but I can't play because I'm reading. Role-playing is awesome.
Indeed. As for me, I have very little things to say. Tomorrow, from the day we're recording this, I'm going to UK Games Expo, which just ended yesterday, on the day that you are listening to this, if you're listening on the day that the episode went up. I'll be running Games on Demand, which is a brilliant thing that our friend of the show, Lloyd, is organizing, which is basically people come and I tell them, hey, do you want to play Dungeon World or Dungeon Crawl Classic or Venture 4 for Crystal Heart? And they say, yeah, we want this. And I say, awesome. And we play it for 2 hours. And
that
it's open.
Is an awesome idea. And let's just pause everything to say, Lloyd, you're awesome, dude.
You're awesome, dude. Yes. And that's open for everyone, because UK Games Expo is mostly for board gamers. I think the Games on Demand is meant for them, as a gateway into the world of role-playing games, and that will be brilliant. That's it. We have one final thing to say. We would like to point you at Aviad Tal, who has a new channel called Behind the Screen on YouTube. We'll have a link in the show notes, but you can just search for Behind the Screen or Aviad Tal. He's a dude from Israel that I know from here and there from the community. And he just started his own new channel. He wanted to talk about all sort of role-playing game-related stuff, mostly for the Game Master. And he started with a video about backstory, which I disagree with a lot of the things that he said there. And the thing that we said here about backstory are maybe different. But I also know that different people absorb information in different ways. And maybe the way that they say it, or the things that they say, or the fact that it's a video, would be useful to you. So check it out and recommend to other people if it is a cool thing. And also, recommend us to other people if you think we are a cool thing. Link to our episodes wherever it is appropriate in a discussion online or something like that. Or, of course, just email us. show@dwarfcast.net with whatever you have to say, if you have any questions, or if you have any suggestions, or if you have both, you can do it in the same mail. But if you send a question, please do say if we are allowed to read it out loud in an episode, because we want to make sure that it's fine, and also if it's urgent, because we might take some time to get to your question if it's for an episode.
I think people might not realize how much of the thing we talk about is simply because someone said, well, you know, you should do an episode about X. I really have a problem with X. So feel free to throw things our way, and hopefully they'll make it to the next episode.
Very much true. And now we shall say goodbye, and it will be in our native tongue. Are you ready, Uri?
I am ready. Leitrot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.